Fiona Ritchie with you. Glad you're here too for the Thistle and Shamrock. Welcome. The Tearan is a creature of the waters off Orkney's Northern Isles, and it's she who brings the bad weather and the swelling seas of the winter months. Orkney and Shetland are islands alive with myth, magic and mystery. So it's a very good place for us to start with Jennifer and Hazel Wrigley there. Our music is the key that will unlock the magical spirit of this time of year when the ancients of Ireland, Scotland, Wales and Brittany marked Samhain, the turning of the year, the festival in whose ancient rituals we can yet find the deepest roots of today's Halloween. So we're off to these old places. Come along and let the music enchant you for an hour. Jean-Michel Voyant of Brittany is ahead on flute, also Malinke, with a ballad that's said to be so authentically old it could almost sound like a horn blowing from elfin lands. King Orfeo coming up from Malinke. You might imagine it to be a recent invention, but like Halloween, the well-known sea serpent of Scotland has endured in myth and legend from antiquity, the Whistlebinkies with the Loch Ness Monster.
Thank you. that left the lady in yon hall, scowin' at her like gray. Her name was Lady Lisabelle, by yatten hangren our law. The king he has a hunting game, scowin' at her like gray. And left his lady all the way, by yatten hangren our law. The elfin king way has dirt, scowin' at her like gray. Pierced his lady to the heart, by yatten hangren our law. When the king came home at noon, scowin' at her like gray. He speared for Lady Lisabelle, by yatten hangren our law. His nobles unto him did say, scowin' at her like gray. My lady was wounded, knew she's dead, by yatten hangren our law. Knew they've taken a life from me, scowin' at her like gray. But her corpse they'll never hae, by yatten hangren our law. The king he's called his noble soul, scowin' at her like gray. To waltz our corpse into the hall, by yatten hangren our law. But when the lords were fa'n asleep, scowin' at her like gray. To the hall her corpse dead creep, by yatten hangren our law. There came a boy free at the hall, scowin' at her like gray. You're bidden to play amongst us all, by yatten hangren our law. The elfin king to him did say, scowin' at her like gray. What will you have for all your play, by yatten hangren our law? For my play I will get tell, scowin' at her like gray. I'll lay my lady Lisabelle, by yatten hangren our law. The sister's son, the unworthy thing, scowin' at her like gray. The morn he will be crankin, by yatten hangren our law. Now you can take your lady home, scowin' at her like gray. And you'll be king o' a' your ae, by yatten hangren our law.
Thank you.
from Brittany, Jean-Michel Vaillant and Les Elfes, sounding for all the world like a horn from elfin lands. Malinke gave us a song collected in Shetland that blends ancient Scots and Scandinavian dialects to tell of the elfin king and King Orfeo. Let's build on that mysterious, magical and increasingly eerie tone on Thistle with Jackie McShee's Pentangle, and a warning to all young women to beware the handsome suitor who seems too good to be true. He may be the devil himself. Better to stick with your nice house carpenter.
Well, I once could have married the king's third son, and a fine young man was he. But now I'm married to a house carpenter, and a nice young man is he. But will you forsake your house carpenter and go along with me? I'll take you to where the grass grows green on the banks of the river deep. What will you have to maintain me upon, to keep me from slavery? I have 7 ships, they will soon be at land, and they at your command shall be. She took her 2 babes by the hand, and kisses gave them 3. Said, "Stay at home, you darling little babes, keep your father's sweet company." She dressed herself in her I do.
Sarah McQuaid lives in Cornwall and has roots in Ireland, the US and Spain. She played King of the Fairies and the Blackbird. Surrounded by the enchantments of the turning of the year in ancient times and the music it inspires, I have original compositions to build the mood and two spine-chilling tales to tell you. That's all in the second half of our time together, and that's going to transport you to another place and time entirely. Online you'll find playlists and listen again options at thistleradio.com, but stay by your radio now, don't you dare go away. This is NPR. This is Fiona Ritchie. Halloween marks the eve of the ancient Celtic New Year, and the age-old rituals of this occasion are still marked here in Scotland, where the origins of many modern Halloween customs can be traced. Scotland's 18th century bard Robert Burns was fascinated by rural tales and songs concerning devils, ghosts, fairies, brownies, witches, and all other supernatural creatures, and they inspired his comic masterpiece Tam O'Shanter. We'll be hearing that later on. A contemporary of Robert Burns, James Hogg, was also born the son of a farmer in the south of Scotland. His writing was deeply influenced by the strange, dark tales contained within the rich heritage of traditional Scottish ballads, the inspiration for the Brownie of the Black Hags. When the Sproats were the Lairds of Wheelop, which is now a long time ago, there was one of the ladies who was very badly spoken of in the country. People did not just openly assert that Lady Wheelop was a witch, but everyone had an aversion even at hearing her named. In short, Lady Wheelop was accounted a very bad woman. She was an inexorable tyrant in her family, quarrelled with her servants, often cursing them, striking them, and turning them away, especially if they were religious, for she could not endure people of that character, but charged them with everything bad. Whenever she found out that any of the servant men of the Laird's establishment were religious, she gave them up to the military and got them shot. And several girls that were regular in their devotions, she was supposed to have got rid of by poison. She was certainly a wicked woman, else many good people were mistaken in her character, and the poor persecuted Covenanters were obliged to unite in their prayers against her. No one can tell to what height of wickedness she might have proceeded had not a check of a very singular kind been laid upon her. Among the servants that came home at the next term was one who called himself Meredith, and a strange person he was. He had the form of a boy, but the features of one 100 years old, save that his eyes had a brilliancy and restlessness which were very extraordinary, bearing a strong resemblance to the eyes of a well-known species of monkey. He was forward and perverse and disregarded the pleasure or displeasure of any person, but he performed his work well and with apparent ease. From the moment he entered the house, the lady conceived a mortal antipathy against him and besought the Laird to turn him away, but the Laird would not consent. He never turned away any servant, and moreover he had hired this fellow for a trivial wage, and he neither wanted activity nor perseverance. The natural consequence of this refusal was that the lady instantly set herself to embitter Meredith's life as much as possible in order to get early quit of a domestic every way so disagreeable. Her hatred of him was not like a common antipathy entertained by one human being against another. She hated him as one might hate a toad or an adder, and his occupation of jotteryman, as the laird termed his servant of all work, keeping him always about her hand, it must have proved highly annoying. She scolded him, she raged at him, but he only mocked her wrath and giggled and laughed at her with the most provoking derision. She tried to fell him again and again, but never with all her address could she hit him, and never did she make a blow at him that she did not repent it. She was heavy and unwieldy, and he as quick in his motions as a monkey. Besides, he generally contrived that she should be in such an ungovernable rage that when she flew at him, she hardly knew what she was doing. At one time, she guided her blow towards him, and he at the same instant avoided it with such dexterity that she knocked down the chief hind, her foreman, and then Meredith giggled so heartily that, lifting the kitchen poker, she threw it at him with a full design of knocking out his brains. But the missile only broke every article of crockery on the kitchen dresser. The lady haunted the menial in the same manner as the raven haunts the eagle for a perpetual quarrel, though the former knows that in every encounter she is to come off the loser. Noises were heard on the stairs by night, and it was whispered among the servants that the lady had been seeking Meredith's chamber on some horrible intent. Several of them would have sworn that they had seen her passing and repassing on the stair after midnight when all was quiet, but then it was likewise well known that Meredith slept with well-fastened doors and a companion in another bed in the same room, whose bed, too, was nearest the door. Nobody cared much what became of the jotteryman, for he was an unsocial and disagreeable person, but someone told him what they'd seen and hinted a suspicion of the lady's intent, but the creature only bit his upper lip, winked with his eyes and said, "She'd better let that alone. She'll be the first to rue that." Not long after this, to the horror of the family and the whole countryside, the laird's only son was found murdered in his bed one morning, under circumstances that manifested the most fiendish cruelty and inveteracy on the part of his destroyer. As soon as the atrocious act was divulged, the lady fell into convulsions and lost her reason, and happy had it been for her had she never recovered the use of it, for there was blood upon her hand, which she took no care to conceal, and there was little doubt that it was the blood of her own innocent and beloved boy, the sole heir and hope of the family. This grievous mistake of Lady Wheelop can only be accounted for by supposing her in a state of derangement, or rather under some evil influence over which she had no control, and to a person in such a state, the mistake was not so very unnatural. The mansion house of Wheelop was old and irregular. The stair had four acute turns and four landing places, all the same. In the uppermost chamber slept the two domestics, Meredith in the bed farthest in, and in the chamber immediately below that, which was exactly similar, slept the young laird and his tutor, the former in the bed farthest in, and thus, in the turmoil of her wild and raging passions, her own hand made herself childless. Meredith was expelled the family forthwith, but refused to accept of his wages, which the man of law pressed upon him for fear of further mischief, but he went away in apparent sullenness and discontent, no one knowing whither. When his dismissal was announced to the lady, who was watched day and night in her chamber, the news had such an effect on her that her whole frame seemed electrified. The horrors of remorse vanished, and another passion, which I can neither comprehend nor define, took the sole possession of her distempered spirit. "He must not go, he shall not go," she exclaimed. "No, no, no, he shall not, he shall not, he shall not." And then she instantly set herself about, making ready to follow him, uttering all the while the most diabolical expressions, indicative of anticipated vengeance. "Oh, could I but snap his nerves one by one and burl among his vitals, could I but slice his heart off piecemeal in small messes and see his blood lopper and bubble and spin away in purple sleighs, and then to see him grin and grin and grin and grin. Oh, how beautiful and grand a sight it would be to see him grin and grin and grin." And in such a style she would run on for hours together, She thought of nothing, she spake of nothing but the discarded Jotteryman, whom most people now began to regard as a creature that was not canny. They had seen him eat and drink and work like other people. Still, he had that about him that was not like other men. Some thought he was a wizard, some a kelpie or a fairy, but most of all, that he was really and truly a brownie. What he was, I do not know, and therefore will not pretend to say, but be that as it may, in spite of locks and keys, watching and waking, the Lady of Wheelop soon made her escape and eloped after him. The attendants indeed would have made oath that she was carried away by some invisible hand, for it was impossible, they said, that she could have escaped on foot like other people. And this edition of the story took in the country, but sensible people viewed the matter in another light. As for instance, when Watty Blythe, the laird's old shepherd, came in from the hill one morning, his wife Bessie thus accosted him. "His presence be about us, Watty Blythe. Have you heard what has happened at the Haw? Things are aye turning war and war there, and it looks like as if Providence had gien up our laird's house to destruction. This grand estate maun now gang frae the sprots, for it has finished them." Na, Bessie, isn't it the estate that has finished the sprots, but the sprots that hae finished the estate and themselves into the boot? They hae been a wicked and degenerate race, and aye the langer the war, till they hae reached the utmost bounds o' earthly wickedness, and it's time the deil were looking after his ain. "His presence be about us, Watty. Haste ye, put on your bonnet, tack your staff in your hand, and gang and see what it is. Shame for me if I dor gang, Bessie." Bessie ran to the door, but soon returned with her mouth wide open and her eyes set in her head. "It's them, Watty, it's them. His presence be about us, what'll we do?"
"Them? What in them?"
"Why, that blackguard creature coming here leading our lady by the hair of the head and yerking her with a stick. I'm terrified out of my wits. What'll we do?"
"We'll see what they say," said Watty, manifestly in as great terror as his wife, and by a natural impulse, or as a last resource, he opened the Bible, not knowing what he did, and then hurried on his spectacles. But before he got two leaves turned over, the two entered, a frightful-looking couple indeed, Meredith, with his old withered face and ferret eyes, leading the Lady of Wheelop by the long hair, which was mixed with grey, and whose face was all bloated with wounds and bruises, and having stripes of blood on her garments.
"I request that you'll shut that book, sir," said the horrible creature, "or if you do not, I'll shut it for you with a vengeance." And with that he seized it and flung it against the wall. Bessie uttered a scream, and Watty was quite paralysed, and although he seemed disposed to run after his best friend, as he called it, the hellish looks of the brownie interposed and glued him to his seat. "Hear what I have to say first," said the creature, "and then pour your fill on that precious book of yours. One concern at a time is enough. I came to do you a service. Here, take this cursed, wretched woman whom you style your lady, and deliver her up to the lawful authorities, to be restored to her husband and her place in society. She has followed one that hates her, and never said one kind word to her in his life. And though I have beat her like a dog, still she clings to me and will not depart, so enchanted is she with the laudable purpose of cutting my throat. I have scourged, I have spurned and kicked her, afflicting her night and day, and yet from my side she will not depart. Take her." Not to dwell longer on this unnatural story, I shall only add very shortly that the Lady of Wheelop soon made her escape once more, and flew as if drawn by an irresistible charm to her tormentor. Her friends looked no more after her, and the last time she was seen alive, it was following the uncouth creature up the water of Dore, weary, wounded and lame, while he was all the way beating her as a piece of excellent amusement. A few days after that, her body was found among some wild hags in a place called Crookburn, by a party of the persecuted Covenanters that were in hiding there, some of the very men whom she had exerted herself to destroy. He was never more seen or heard of in this kingdom, though all that countryside was kept in terror for him many years afterwards, and to this day they will tell you of the Brownie of the Black Hags.
Thank you.
you enjoyed The Brownie of the Black Hags by 18th century Scottish writer James Hogg. Original music was by Margaret Kennedy with Janice Nielsen. I'm Fiona Ritchie with Tales for All Hallows' Eve. Among all the places associated with Robert Burns, Scotland's national bard, none stirs the imagination more completely than the old ruined church near the west coast town of Ayr. Alloway Kirk, which was a ruin even in the time of Burns in the late 1700s, was reputed to be the site of infernal gatherings where witches would meet to plot their evil magic and to dance to the piping of the devil himself. Stories of these rites came to mind for Burns when he composed The Tale of Tam O'Shanter, which makes full use of the old Scots dialect, the lifeblood in his writing. The story takes us from the warmth and drunken comfort of the village pub out into the dreary, stormy night and homeward past the haunted ruin of Alloway Kirk on the back of trusty Maggie and in the company of Tam O'Shanter. When Chapman Billies leave the street and druthy neighbours meet, as market days are wearing late and folk begin to tack the gate, while we sit boozing at the nappy, getting foo and unca happy, we think na on the lang Scots miles, the mosses, waters, slaps and stiles that lie between us and our hame, where sits our sulky, sullen dame, gathering her brows like gathering storm, nursing her wrath to keep it warm. This truth fund honest Tam O'Shanter, as he frae Ayr ae night did canter, all dare wham ne'er a town surpasses for honest men and bonny lasses. Oh, Tam, hadst thou but been sae wise as ta'en thy ain wife Kate's advice, she told thee weel thou was a skellum, a blethering, blustering, drunken blellum, that frae November till October ae market day thou was na sober, that ilka melder wi' the miller thou sat as lang as thou had siller, that every naig was cawed a shoe on, the smith and thee got roaring foo on, that at the Lord's house, even on Sunday, thou drank wi' Kirkton Jean till Monday. She prophesied that late or soon thou would be found deep drowned in Doon, or catched wi' warlocks in the mirk by Alloway's old haunted kirk. Ah, gentle dames, it gars me greet to think how many counsels sweet, how money lengthened sage advices the husband frae the wife despises. But to our tale. A market night, Tam had got planted unca right, fast by an ingle, bleezing finely, with reaming swats that drank divinely. And at his elbow, Suitor Johnny, his ancient, trusty, druthy crony, Tam lewd him like a verra brother. They'd been foo for weeks together. The night drave on with sangs and clatter, and aye the ale was growing better. The landlady and Tam grew gracious with favours secret, sweet and precious. The suitor told his queerest stories. The landlord's laugh was ready chorus. The storm without might rear and rustle. Tam didna mind the storm a whistle. Care, mad to see a man sae happy e'en drowned himsel among the nappy. As bees flee hame with lades o' treasure, the minutes wing their way with pleasure. Kings may be blessed, but Tam was glorious, o'er a' the ills o' life, victorious. But pleasures are like poppies spread. You seize the flower, its bloom is shed. Or like the snow falls in the river, a moment white, then melts forever. Or like the Borealis race, that flit till you can point their place. Or like the rainbow's lovely form, evanishing amid the storm. Nae man can tether time or tide. The hour approaches, Tam maun ride. That hour, o' night's black arch the key stain, that dreary hour he mounts his beast in, and sic a night he tacks the road in, as ne'er poor sinner was abroad in. The wind blew as 'twad blawn its last, the rattling showers rose on the blast, the speedy gleams the darkness swallowed, loud, deep and lang the thunder bellowed. That night, a child might understand, the deil had business on his hand. Weel mounted on his grey mare Meg, a
better never lifted leg, Tam scalped on through Dublin mire, despising wind and rain and fire, whilst holding fast his good blue bonnet, whilst crooning o'er some old Scots sonnet, whilst glowering round with prudent cares, lest bogles catch him unawares. Kirk Alloway was drawing nigh, where ghosts and hoolets nightly cry. But this time he was cross the ford, where in the snow the chapmen smoored, and past the birks and meikle stane, where drunken Charlie Brack's neck bane, and through the whins and by the cairn, where hunters fund the murdered bairn, and near the thorn aboon the well, where Mungo's mither hanged hersel, before him Doon pours all his floods, the doubling storm roars through the woods, the lightnings flash from pole to pole, near and more near the thunders roll. When, glimmering through the groaning trees, Kirk Alloway seemed in a blaze. Through Ilka Bore the beams were glancing, and loud resounded mirth and dancing. Inspiring bold John Barleycorn, what dangers thou canst make us scorn? With Tippany, we fear nae evil, but Uscovy, we face the devil. The swat sae reamed in Tammy's noddle, their play he cardna deals a bottle, but Maggie stood, right sair astonished, till by the heel and hand admonished, she ventured forward in the light, and vow, Tam saw an unca sight, warlocks and witches in a dance. Nae cotillion brent new frae France, but hornpipes, jigs, trespays and reels put life and metal in their heels. When at Bunker in the East, there sat old Nick, in shape o' beast, a toosy tyke, black, grim and large, to gie them music was his charge. He screwed the pipes and gart them skirl, till roof and rafters aw did dirl. Coffins stood round like open presses that shod the dead in their last dresses, and by some devilish cantrip slight, each in its cold hand held a light, by which heroic Tam was able to note upon the haly table a murderer's banes and gibbeterns, twa spanlang wee unchristened bairns, a thief new cutted frae a rape, with his last gasp his gab did gape. Five tomahawks with blood red rusted, five scimitars with murder crusted, a garter which a babe had strangled, a knife a father's throat had mangled, whom his ain son no life bereft, the grey hairs yet stacked to the heath, with mair oh horrible an offer, which even to name would be unlawful. As Tammy glowered, amazed and curious, mirth and fun grew fast and furious, the piper loud and louder blew, the dancers quick and quicker flew, they reeled, they set, they crossed, they cleek it, till Ilka Carlin swat and reek it, and coost her duddies to the wark, and link at it in her sark. Now Tam, oh Tam, the baby queens, all plump and strapping in their teens, their sarks, instead of creasy flannin, and snow-white 1700 linen, breeks of mine, my only pair, that ain't were plush or good blue hair, I would have gien them off my hardies for a blink of the bonny birdies. But with the beldams, auld and thrall, red woody hags would spin a fall, louping and flinging on a crummock, under dinna turn my stomach. But Tam kenned what was what fu' brawly. There was a winsome wench, and Wally, that night enlisted in the corps, lang after kenned on Carrick shore, for money a beast to dead she shot, and perished money a bonny boat, and shook baith meikle corn and bear, and kept the countryside in fear. Her cutty sark, o' paisley harn, that while a lassie she had worn, in longitude, though sorely scanty, it was her best, and she was vaunty. Ah, little kenned thy reverend granny, that sark she coffed for her wee nanny, wi' twa pound Scots, 'twas o' riches, would ever graced a dance o' witches. But hear my muse her wingman cower, sick flights are far beyond her power to sing how nanny lap and flang, a supple jade she was and strang, and how Tam stood like ane bewitched, and thought his very een enriched. Even Satan glowered and fidged fu' fain, and hotched and blew a might and main, till first a caper, sign another, Tam tint his reason a' thegither, and roars out, "Weel done, cutty sark!" And in an instant, all was dark.
and scarcely had he Maggie rallied when out the hellish legion sallied. As bees buzz out wi' angry fyke when plundering herds assail their byke, as open pussies mortal foes when pop she starts before their nose, as eager runs the market crowd when catch the thief resounds aloud, so Maggie runs, the witches follow, wi' money and eldritch screech and hollow. Ah, Tam, thou'll get thy fairin, in hell they'll roast thee like a herrin. In vain thy Kate awaits thy coming, Kate soon will be a woeful woman. Now, do thy speedy utmost, Meg, and win the keystone of the brig. There at them thou thy tail may toss, a running stream they dare not cross. But ere the keystone she could make, the fainter tail she had to shake, for Nanny, far before the rest, hard upon noble Maggie pressed, and flew at Tam with furious ettle. But little was she Maggie's mettle, a spring brought off her master Hale, but left behind her ain grey tail, the carlin clotted by the rump, and left poor Maggie scarce a stump.
Now, wha this tale o' truth shall read, ilk man and mother's son, take heed. Whene'er to drink you are inclined, or cutty sarks run in your mind, think you may buy the joys o'er dear. Remember Tam O'Shanter's mare.
Maggie Sansone with The Traveller's Dream for you now. The Tale of Tam O'Shanter was written by Robert Burns. Rab Handley composed and performed the music original for this project. The engineer was Roy Ashby. The Brownie of the Black Hags was written by James Hogg and set to music composed and performed for this recording by Margaret Kennedy with Janice Nielsen. The Thistle and Shamrock comes to you each week from Scotland. I'm Fiona Ritchie. Online at thistleradio.com, you can look for playlists within a couple of days of our radio broadcasts, including this one, Tales for All Hallows' Eve, or write with a self-addressed stamped envelope to the Thistle and Shamrock, P.O. Box 518, Matthews, North Carolina, 28106. Streaming music on the web at thistleradio.com, the Thistle and Shamrock is a service mark of Fiona Ritchie. Support for NPR comes from Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being and sense of security at cigna.com. Heather Sturt Haga and Paul G. Haga supporting Salzburg Global Seminar, which works to challenge current and future leaders to solve issues of global concern. Learn more at salzburgglobal.org. And the Wincote Foundation. This is NPR Music.